Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. I just have a couple quick announcements to make before I introduce my special friend and guest. First announcement is that we're going to be having our healing weekend coming up. It's only in a few more weeks in April, about 6 weeks away, and I'm very excited, 7 weeks away, that some wonderful women and I will be getting together in California. This is my very last healing weekend, so I want to go out with a splash on the healing weekend. I'm going to have some amazing guests coming there to do some wonderful workshops to help our women on their road to healing. This is in Irvine, California. There is no cost for the weekend except for $75, which pays for your meals on Saturday, and that gives us the room that we need to have the meeting. Other than your expenses getting there in the room, you know, this is a wonderful opportunity to meet other women who are sharing your journey and your experience. Some have already passed it and they're coming there to contribute, as we'll be talking about a little bit later. So if you're on your road to healing, if you're past the road to healing and you want to come and just join with a wonderful group of women who will understand everything you say long before you say it, because we've all lived the same experience, just in different ways and different methods, then please write to me at bonkay@aol.com or go to my website at gayhusbandswithans.com, and there's a link there to email me for the information on the weekend. It's limited seating. We have room for about 3 more women, and that's really it, because you can't be overcrowded and have an effective weekend. And as those of you who receive my newsletter know, this is my last season for the show. I'm going to be pretty much retiring from doing, you know, the talk show, newsletters. I'll still be there as a support system for women who are going through this, making referrals. But this is the end of the line, and that's because I have other things that are really pressing in my life as far as expanding my business that gives me a living so that I can do this kind of work. And it's 35 years, so it's getting time to move on. But on my last season of shows, I wanted to pick my best guest that I've had and be with them one more time. And that's why I'm starting the show with a woman who became like a sister to me and a close friend and someone I can count on, Deborah Sutton, who's been with me for the last few years with the Straight Wives support group, her books, her radio shows with me. And like I say, someone who I consider to be my family now. So, Deborah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Bonnie. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about you? How's the weather in Texas?
It's been a little chilly today and cloudy. It's been raining here for about a week, and I'm looking forward to some sunshine. It does get cold here.
Well, it does or it doesn't?
It does. It'll get.
Did you have any snow at all?
No, it doesn't usually snow here because I'm near the coast. We don't get much snow. But
it's a trade-off for the horrible heat that you have, though, Deb.
Yes.
There's nothing hotter than summer in Texas, correct?
It's hot.
It is very hot. I've been there in the summer, and I said, I couldn't even find the air where it was. I couldn't believe people were breathing in Texas in August, but I guess their blood's thinner than mine. I was visiting, and I was, like, looking for the air, like, where do you breathe? But I'm glad that it's been a mild winter. It's been a mild winter here on the East Coast. I'm so excited. We only had snow, like, once, and it was only a couple of inches, and it's already the middle of February, so I'm crossing my fingers that the groundhog saw the shadow or didn't see it, but he said spring is in the air, so I'm really excited about that. So, Deborah, it's been a good ride together, but, you know, like I say, over the last few years since I first met you, we've gone through a lot as far as learning about different things. You've taught me a lot, and you've kind of become your own, you know, expert as far as the whole issue of narcissism. Would you say that that was just learned in recent years, or you knew about this before?
It was just learned since my divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how long ago was that?
7 years ago. I just started looking at narcissistic personality disorder right before I left the marriage. And mm-hmm. then I found you, and I started researching narcissistic personality disorder. So I guess for about 5 years now, I've read and researched about the disorder.
I'm going to tell you something. When I was growing up, I never heard that word until actually recent years. In the last 10 years, I didn't even really know, understand the word narcissism, maybe 15 mm-hmm. years. But when I was growing up, people would just say, oh, they're conceited, or, oh, they're self-absorbed. You know, we didn't know from personality disorders. Am I right?
You're right. We used to call my father that when we were teenagers, but we thought it meant conceited and full of himself. You know.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And not.
I think
knowing
if I had to
anything.
Pick a terminology that would describe it, that's a really good one, Deborah. Full of himself.
Yeah.
But we didn't
not
know differently.
Anything
we
about
just
personality.
Was.
I didn't know anything about personality disorders back then, and then. You know, I remembered that my father was discharged from the service with antisocial personality disorder. And I just started connecting the dots. Like, I was raised in this, and I married this. And it seemed
well,
to be a pattern.
I think what's interesting, yeah, I was going to ask you this. I did a show earlier today with my friend therapist, Alexa Servadinio, that'll be aired on Wednesday through Blog Talk Radio. And we really didn't discuss too much the gay thing. We discussed really, you know, toxic relationships in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And she was bringing up the fact that you just talked about, and I, you know, told her that this has been my experience, that when you grow up with parents who are narcissists, have personality disorders, or who are, you know, any range of things from sociopaths, psychopaths, any of that, it totally lowers your sense of who you are and your sense of self-esteem, because you can never make that parent happy. You know, you're running around in circles trying to be the good child, but no matter how good you are, they always find fault with you. And so you grow up with this toxicity, and then you look for someone, or you have someone who comes along who looks good, because, you know, you talk a lot about the love bombing. Mm-hmm. You know, people do this to you. And I think that guys who are like this, they are like, they can sense right away when someone has grown up in a vulnerable life, where there's been a lot of, you know, this kind of mistreatment. And that's the kind of woman that they're looking for. Would you say that's true from your experience?
From my experience, yes. And also something to look out for me from now on would be that I had a feeling of familiarity. Familiar, it's not coming out right. Familiar, you know, a familiar feeling initially with these. I've been married twice with my husband, so it felt familiar to me. It was just what I grew up in, what I was used to, what I accepted.
And that's the problem, because that we don't know any different. It's learned behavior. We grow up with it. Most of the time, our mothers accepted it. If our mothers weren't narcissists, and there are some who have mothers who were narcissists, but for those who had really good mothers, many times they were just like us. They grew up in a family where there was disorder or chaos, and they accepted behaviors from their husbands that made us think that that's what we're supposed to do.
Yes.
Would you say that, did that happen in your family?
Yes.
Growing up?
My father was very dominant and abusive toward my mother growing up.
Uh-huh. And how did your mother respond?
My mother always thought that, and I don't take this as far as my mom, but she always thought these people needed love, and that they were never shown love, so they needed love. This was her philosophy. And as I grew up, I'm like, no, you are wrong. These people can't be, love is not curing them. It's not fixing them.
I know, but you know what? I've been on the show today on Alexa's show that I think that as women, we are socialized from the time we're born to be the nurturers, to be the caretakers. After all, we do have children. We're mothers. And we grow up with these illusions of fantasies, like watching Disney movies of Cinderella and Snow White, Rapunzel, all these people who, you know, went with men who had problems, you know, and depended on them to be fixed. Or to fix them, you know, and we grew up thinking that life is a fairy tale, that if we find someone who can love us, then we can fix them even if they're broken. And I certainly felt that way. I thought love will cure all. If I love him enough, then he won't be doing this, he won't be doing that. You know, if I loved him enough, he wouldn't be gay. You know, he could see that the straight life was the way he really wanted to live his life. And that's why, you know, back in those days, we didn't know any differently. And I posted something today in, you know, our support group that really bothered me. And I was watching this morning, you know, when I'm doing work on my computer, I have the television going on. I'm not necessarily listening to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep it on the comic, you know, the light comedies from the 60s and 70s, so I don't have to think too much. And there's a show called Three's Company. Do you remember that?
I remember.
Jack Ritter was in it with Suzanne Somers and Joyce DeWitt. And it was about two women who were living with a guy in an apartment. And he had to pretend to be gay because otherwise they wouldn't let a man live with two women.
Yeah.
Because back in those days, it wasn't a moral thing to do. Like today, you can live with anybody. Back then, you couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So he was always acting like he was gay whenever the landlord was around so the landlord wouldn't get angry. Well, today was an episode and it just really upset me because Jack, who's the main character played by John Ritter, he met a woman who just really fell gaga over him, but he wasn't attracted to her. So, you know, she was following him all over, and she came into his house, and he didn't know what to do because she was trying to practically jump all over him. So one of his friends he called, and he said, oh, yes, this is my lover, you know, or this is who I'm with, you know, acting like he's gay,
mm-hmm.
or he's really straight in here. And the woman said, oh, well, that's okay. I like a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it just really bothered me because mm-hmm. this is a perception that so many people have of straight wives. And then she went on to make another comment like, oh, well, you know, don't say you don't like it if you haven't tried it. You know, try it first, and then you can make a decision. So
yes.
even back then, I looked up the date. It was like in the late 70s that this show was made. It's almost like people were laughing at the fact that people had a choice and that, you know, you can go either way. You know, you don't have to be gay. If you meet a woman who really makes you excited, you can be straight. And this was the thinking back then, and it's no wonder that women who were our age, you know, or a
yes.
little, I'm a little older than you, but, you know, during that generation, it's no wonder why we wouldn't even understand the whole thing on gay. I would have thought the same thing.
Yes.
I would have thought it was a choice, that if a man's with me, and even if he had a gay experience in the past, and he's gay, was gay, now he's going to be straight. And it's kind of like the same thing. If a man is broken, you can fix him. If a man is gay, you can make him straight. And that's how we used to think. And it was based
yes,
upon our lack of knowledge because there was no knowledge on this. Would you
well,
say that's true?
I agree. That show reflects that time period. You know,
mm-hmm.
what he did, pretending to be gay to get rid of that girl. And I guess she didn't mind, and it's okay, and she didn't mind the challenge.
I hate to say I'm ignorant, too. I mean, I was 17 years old. I went out to California, and I met a guy who was gay. His name was Glenn. And I was, like, taken in by Glenn. You know, he was also a narcissist, but easy to, you know, he was charming, and he was attentive, and everybody loved him. And, you know, he could be mean, too, but, you know, he had that charming personality, so people wanted to clamor around him. And we just really hit it off. He was, like, 23. I was 17. And when I heard he was gay, I didn't really understand gay at all. You know, I just knew it was a guy who liked guys. But I thought, well, if only they met the right woman, they wouldn't want to be gay anymore. I used
yeah.
to say, oh, these poor guys, they probably had a bad mother. They didn't have good women experiences. You know, all they need is love and, you know, tenderness and true love to show them that they can be happy being straight. That's how stupid I was at 17.
Well, we know more today, and I don't feel like it's a choice. I mean, I feel like it's something they're born with.
Oh, well, now I know differently, of course. But, you know, there was such little information back then that I think people had such a hard time conceiving. It just didn't even make sense why a gay man would marry you unless
yeah.
there was a choice and he was choosing you. And that's why I had no idea my ex-husband was really gay, even though I had some hints from, you know, somebody else who said, yeah, they think he's gay. And I just, you know, it was a whirlwind kind of relationship. It happened so fast and we were constantly busy with a million things that we didn't really have a chance to know each other. But guess what? Even if I had known he had experience in the past and he would have said to me, that was my past, has nothing to do with who I am today, I would have said, okay. I
yeah.
didn't know differently back then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was going with somebody before him who that happened with. You know, my relationship before my ex-husband was a guy who I knew in high school who I was going with. And he was always aloof, you know, but I always thought, my mother used to say, well, he's a Cancer, you know, Cancers are like that. You know, we used to blame everything on astrology. You know, it wasn't like human nature. It was like you were born under the wrong sign. That's why you're acting like that. So I thought, okay, well, he does, you know, he's very attentive. He wants to be with me all the time. So, okay, and we did have sex, and it was not the best. But, you know, when you're teenagers, what's best sex?
Yeah.
So when we got older, we met up again. And this is like 8 years later, and, you know, he was a doctor, and I was living in New York running my group. And we met up by chance, you know, well, not by chance, I went looking for him. And I met up with him again, and we started going together again. And he said to me, I said to him, well, what have you been doing all this time? I was just ending a marriage, not to my gay husband, to the husband before. I was ending, you know, in the process, I was ending that marriage. And I said, well, what have you been doing? Have you been married at all? So he said, no. He said, I've had four significant relationships since I last saw you. And then I remember him distinctly saying two of them were with men and two of them were with women. And I thought, well, that sounds a little strange. Two of them were with men. And I said, well, what happened to the two that were with men? He said, well, I wasn't sure. He said, you know, I got involved with somebody. I thought, okay, I'll try it. You know, but guess what? He said, I had two men, and I realized that's not who I am. He said, I just didn't want to be with a man. I want to be with a woman. So that sounded
so
okay to me.
You know,
Yeah, well, I didn't understand homosexuality. I didn't understand that it's who you are. It's not what you choose.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy to get involved with somebody, but there was always something off with that relationship. And again, I didn't pin it on gay because I didn't know enough.
Yeah.
I just thought, well, he's still that cold, aloof person who's, you know, sullen and he has mood swings, blah, 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 you know. Because when you really love somebody, you really want to try to think the best. And you're hoping that if you love them the best, that they're going to respond and change their behavior and realize that you love them and they can love you back and everybody's going to have a happy ending. That's what I used to think. Did you think the same way?
Yes. When I was growing up in my neighborhood, there was a young couple, and he was known gay, and she loved him, and they wanted to get married anyway, and she knew he was gay, and they had one child together, and then they didn't last a year, maybe, and they split up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she thought that, you know, she could change who he was.
Well, guess what? He thinks the same thing.
Yeah.
These guys, they really believe that if they marry you and they love you, then all those feelings they had for men are going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today it's a different world where it's more accepted in some areas than others. You know, people get married and they're gay. They have families and they're gay. When we were growing up, there was no such thing. None. You know, it wasn't like that. If you were gay, you were still the outcast. People were still calling you names. You still were discriminating against. So I really do think that it was so hard to be gay that if you had the choice to be straight, and there were some men who felt they had a choice because they were able to perform sexually.
Mm-hmm.
Not all gay men could. I mean, there are gay men, you could put a gun to their head and say either you perform with this woman or die, and they'd have to die. They would be unable to do it.
Yes.
You know, it's not like when you're a woman and you can kind of fake it. When you're a man, you can't fake that.
Yeah.
You have to have an erection. You have to have an orgasm. You don't fake it. So for those men who can perform, I think they're really hoping against hope that this will be their sexual orientation.
Yes. Well, because there are many that can perform with a woman also.
For a while. For a while.
Yes, for a while.
And then the worst thing I hear from women, oh, we had a good sex life. You didn't have a good sex life. You never even had a sex life before you married your gay husband. So the fact that you had sex a few times doesn't mean it's a good sex life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many of the women tell me they thought they had a good sex life till they went out and met somebody straight and had sex.
Yeah.
They didn't even understand what a good sex life meant. Because just because somebody can perform sex like a seal doesn't mean that, you know, they're good in bed.
That's true.
Right. Or that they understand what passion is or foreplay is. I mean, this is something that's foreign to them. It's not a natural instinct.
No, it's not.
That's why I say.
That part of my marriage ended, you know, in for like the last 12 years, there was no intimacy. So it came to a dead halt.
Well, that's usually what does happen. I mean, it doesn't, you know, usually get better. It usually, in almost all cases, gets worse.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right. I mean, I've heard some say they had sex with their husband all the way up till the end, and then found out, you know, he's gay, or he was leaving her for a man, or, and she says she doesn't understand they had sex, you know. That was not my experience.
I did get a letter from a man. I will not identify him, but I'm going to say I just got this letter today, and I think that he articulated this better than most men can. And so I will, of course, not share his name, but I just want to share a couple of lines he said. He said, "You won't be surprised to hear me say that I love my wife, but my homosexual feelings are now quite strong. And I am now at a crisis point because I have fallen in love with another man, and I now have feelings that I have never had before. I thought I knew what love for a woman felt like, and I assumed I felt exactly what other men felt. But now I have feelings that are more genuine, and it's both comforting and exhilarating. But I am so also anxious and can't concentrate. I've been, you know," so he goes on and on. But, you know, that's the whole thing. They think they're in love with a woman. They can perform sex. But it's just as unfulfilling to them as it is to us. And I really believe that. It's not fulfilling to us. It's sex. It's not fulfilling to them. It's sex. They're doing it because they have to do it, not because they want to do it, but because they're obligated to do it. And that's when they do it. I mean, a lot of men don't even do it. You know, they'll do it in the beginning for a couple of years.
I think that as a woman, you can sense that it's just an obligation. And it's damaging to you as a woman. Or even to experience the rejection of intimacy in the marriage is damaging.
Well, that was one of the things we were talking about today also on Alexa's show about when you have toxicity in a marriage or in a relationship, meaning that there's somebody there who is always trying to bring you down, always never trying to build you up because they have their own issues, their own personality disorders, their own problems, and you get raised by parents like that who put their needs before your needs. And they still think they're great parents, even though they're putting their needs ahead of you. But they're the first ones to talk about, oh, I'm such a good mother, the ultimate father, my kids are so lucky to have me. And, you know, it's like I said to Alexa today also about toxic relationships. A lot of times women are so beaten down by them. And I said, I judge no one because I was one of them. And I said, I was a strong woman when I started out in my marriage, but it didn't take long to break me. Because when you live with somebody who's controlling and manipulating and they know how to push all your buttons, all your weak points to bring out all your weaknesses, it's really really easy to see how you can lose yourself, right?
Yes. And that my husband was very controlling as well and found fault with everything I did. So I was pretty broken down at the end of it. But I stayed a long time.
Yes. Well, I think that's what saved me is that I didn't stay a long time. I mean, I was broken, but because I didn't stay as long as other people, I was able to pick up my life sooner and to move forward with it.
Too. You still had a relationship. Little baby. And you still had a relationship with their father for years.
Yes. Long after its due date expired, I was still in that relationship. Which is why I also tell women, never follow my example. Don't do as I do. Because, you know, it's not healthy. I didn't have a healthy relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because I'm by nature a caretaker and because I am a caring person that I let him take advantage of me. It's almost like I became his own personal counselor, even though we weren't married any longer. He would call me up and tell me about his love problems. He would, you know, ask my advice every day, like every day.
Mm-hmm.
He needed somebody to be a sounding board, so I was it. And I allowed it to continue. I allowed it because of the children, because, you know, I was hoping that he could be a better father to them if we were friendly. And then when we lost our children, because they both died within 2.5 years of each other, through his manipulation of, well, you know, the children would want us to be friends, you know, that would make them so happy. And because I was really weak and vulnerable at that point, you know, I went along with that story for a few years until I couldn't go along with it anymore because he overstepped any boundary. It had nothing to do with me. It was other things he was doing that was wrong.
Yeah.
And then I had to cut him off. And, you know, cutting off somebody who's toxic in your life.
How long did that last that you cut him off from your life?
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
And it would have been permanent except he got sick, you know, because he had cancer that eventually took his life.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, until that point, you know, I had no intentions of ever talking to him again. And it took time to readjust to that because when you're so used to toxicity in your life every day and somebody draining you every day, and there was always a part of me that still felt sorry for him, that still felt he was vulnerable. You know, I was always looking for that side of him that I had originally met that was just the act.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really a person. It was the act that he was following. I think you know about that, too, with your ex-husband, right?
Yes, and what I think I had with my ex-husband is what you would call a trauma bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bond formed through, like, intermittent reinforcement. You know, they're nice to you a little bit, and then they're mean, abusive, and then they're nice again, and this over and over through the years. And you become, you know, bonded to them through trauma, and it's hard to break free from that.
Because they know how to reel you in, throw you out, reel you in, throw you out, like a fisherman. You know,
yes.
He puts out his line, and he wheels you in, he tells you all these good things, how much he loves you. Mine used to say, nobody will ever love you as much as I love you. And you start listening to these messages, and when you didn't come from a, quote, functional type of upbringing to start with, it's really easy to believe this stuff. I was repeating my life with him that I repeated with my father.
Yeah.
You know, I loved my father, but he was really a toxic person in my life who was always knocking me down, you know, because I didn't fit into his image of what he wanted me to look like or what he wanted me to be. And so he said it was loving, quote, loving words, you know, and it just kept knocking me down for my own good. And, you know, I think that after a while you think that when people do this to you, they're doing it out of love, and love becomes very mixed up in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just never quite know what love is. And I said the one who really taught me the best out of all the people I've met over the years, the meaning of love, was Janine Finelli, you know, who's been on with our show for a number of times, who's a health coach. And when I met her, and this beautiful woman who had been knocked down so many times, she had tattooed in beautiful letters on both of her hands, love on one is kind on the other one. And I thought, you know what? This is it. This says it all. There's nothing you can say beyond that. That if somebody is not kind to you in your relationship, then it's not love. Would you say that's true?
That's true. That is the truth. You think about that.
Because I don't care how much people say they love you, if they can't prove it or do actions. And I know, Deb, I've spoken to women in our group, and I was one of them also, who was very emotionally beaten down. I didn't have the experience that you've had. I didn't have physical violence used on me. It was just emotional violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of times we would say, you know, say, well, did he ever hit you? And I say, no, he never hit me. And he never did. But sometimes I was kind of wishing he did. Because people don't seem to sympathize with the emotional beatdown you take. You know, if you have a black eye, then people feel sorry for you. But if there's no visible signs of abuse, they look at it like, oh, you're making it up. Or, oh, how bad could it be?
Oh,
he didn't hit you. What are you complaining about, right?
Yes, I think the emotional abuse is really, to me, I think that was the hardest part of it. Was the emotional beast hardest for me to get over?
Mm-hmm. Because it knocks away at your inner core of who you are.
Right.
I know for me, with a gay husband, it knocked away at my feminine spirit. It kind of broke it because, you know, I was relatively young when I met my ex-husband. I was in my late 20s, And, you know, when you love someone, you want to express it through, you know, having a sexual relationship with them. But if they're not interested in that kind of a relationship, I mean, it's not just the time you spend having sex, which is probably the least amount of time that you do anything together, but that time is so important because it's bonding you together as a couple. It's a way that people express love is through sex. And when you're being told, that's not what we're doing, or what's wrong with you that you always want to keep doing this, or why are you always pressuring me to have sex? You know, I hear it from so many of our women, you get to the point where you just want to say, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's degrading to have to want to ask for sex from a husband who doesn't want to have sex with you. Wouldn't you say that's true?
It is degrading, very much so.
I mean, that's how I felt.
It chips away at who you are as a woman.
I said women are entitled to have a sexual relationship with someone.
Yes.
But what were you saying about it?
I forgot my train of thought now.
Well, that's quite all right. I forget mine plenty of times, too.
The rejection of no sex in your marriage, it feels like a rejection, and it's very painful, and it chips away at who you are as a woman. I know there at the end, I was so chipped away at, I could hardly move anymore.
Yes, the emotional strain of these marriages really beats you down. I certainly know it did for me. And I became someone that I didn't recognize and someone that others didn't recognize. And they would say, what's the matter? What's wrong with you? Why are you acting like this? You know, I was a strong woman before I got married to him. You know, I was leading an activist kind of militant kind of group back in the 70s, you know, when times were different, people were protesting. And I was leading that group. I was getting arrested for all these activities. You know, people always said, oh, she's the strongest woman I've ever met. And then I met my ex-husband who just pummeled me down within a short amount of time. And it's amazing. That's why I said to Alexa on my show with her today, you know, if I was such a strong woman and I could be beaten down, you know, emotionally to the point of non-recognition, how much worse is it for other women who aren't strong going into these relationships? They don't have a chance.
Right.
Would you say that's true from your experience?
That's true. I thought I was a strong person and had been through a lot and could handle a lot. But here at the end of this marriage that I went through, I'd never been so broken in my life.
Uh-huh.
I felt so broken.
No, I'd say that you went through two marriages and two divorces, and so did I. But the first one was so much different than the second one.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
I agree. And my first marriage was an abusive marriage as well. But this last one really did something to me. It woke me up, too.
Mm-hmm.
It brought me into an awareness about these types of toxic relationships and brought me into an awareness about my... self.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's good when you can get that, but I don't think you can get it while you're in it. Do you agree?
I agree. I wouldn't have been able to see all that I've seen getting away from that, because it brought everything home to me that I had lived in my whole entire life. But it was a long process. I mean, it didn't just happen overnight. It happened over the course of these past 7 years.
Mm-hmm. What's some of the advice you can give to women about recovery and healing, Deborah?
Well, I would say that you really need to focus on yourself and your needs. And there might be some, you know, time that you need to spend alone, not to rush into a new relationship right away. And everybody's healing process is different, so don't compare yourself to somebody else's healing. And don't listen to people that tell you to just get over it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's the thing that hurts so much is that people feel that we're just lingering in our own sorrow because we like being there. We like being a victim. And that's certainly not what this is about.
No,
you know, these marriages are different.
They are different. This is different than my first marriage.
Mm-hmm. I had issues in my first marriage, but they were different kinds of issues.
Yeah.
They were issues I could recover from. The issues in my second marriage to my gay husband were issues that lasted me for many years to come. Because it's not like being married to somebody who's straight where you're arguing on equal territory. You know, even though one may be more dominant than the other, at least you have a fighting chance of winning a fight. When you're fighting with somebody who's gay, they're looking to trip you up because they know they're lying the whole way that they're lying to you. You know, it's not like they have something to say to you that makes sense. They're living a lie. They're seeing people on the side. They're having sexual relationships with other men. And then they're trying to make you think that you're imagining the whole thing or that you're, you know, they gay-light you, as I call it, because they really believe that, you know, you're the one who's, they want to make you think you're crazy because they don't want to get caught and they don't want to be honest. So it's so much easier to blame you for all of their problems. And that's what they do. You're constantly being blamed for whatever problems are, you know, going on in the house.
And even if
and
there
start
wasn't
questioning
anything
yourself.
Going on in the house, and I found this we could just be sitting there watching TV, and out of the blue he could start calling me a liar, telling me that I'm lying and I'm not living an honest life, and that all people are liars and all people aren't living honestly, and I'm not even knowing where this is coming from. But I mean, I can see, look back and see now, it was because he was the one that was lying and living dishonestly, and he was accusing. They like to accuse you of the things they're doing.
Well, that's true, because case in fact, I heard from a woman today who I've known for many years, and her story is so sad to me out of all the stories that I hear, and I hear so many. But when she was younger, you know, back in the 60s, before people knew anything, she's a little bit older than us. And, you know, she married a gay husband, and she came home one day, she had terrible itching, vaginal itching. She went to her doctor, and her doctor told her that she has, you know, some kind of, bugs. What was that called back then? My mind just escaped me. But, you know, when you have crabs, that was what it was called back then. And that, you know. Yes, I remember them from the 1960s. You know, so when she went and she confronted her husband, you know, he started screaming at her, how dare you go out cheating on me? You know, because of you, I might have a disease now. I mean, she didn't cheat on him. I mean, you know, he gave it to her. And when you think about how women have to take the heat for their husband's promiscuous behavior, and how many women of our group have, you know, through my network, have about 20-22% have sexually transmitted diseases that will last them forever. And so often the husband turns on the wife and says, well, who have you been cheating on me with?
Yeah.
You know, they know damn well she's not cheating. They're out there cheating, bringing home diseases. They're not having safe sex with their wives. And then blaming them. Like, I just don't get it.
They
and
really
the
do turn every single thing around on the wives and make everything the wife's fault. I don't care what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they
blame
don't
me for everything.
Any
your own sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, how much lower can you get than that, right?
Right. I know when I found gay porn on the computer, he accused me of doing something wrong on the computer and giving us a computer virus. You know.
Mm-hmm. Did you believe it?
At the time, I thought maybe it was some kind
of
mistake.
Yeah, probably.
It was in the history, though. It was stored in the history. So it was a site. I mean, I wasn't going to look at that. And we were the only two in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just stored that away, and I didn't take it seriously at that time. It wasn't until my divorce that I put a lot of pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, sometimes
things,
it takes
divorce
to make you put all those pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these men are not blatant in their, you know, what they're doing, and plus we don't have the understanding it. You know, we're looking for them cheating with women instead of cheating with men. Did that ever occur to you, that it was a woman?
Yes. That's what I would have been looking for, you know, him cheating with a woman.
Exactly. Why would we think a man? I mean, my ex-husband had plenty of women all over him. You know, women loved him. Because he was like their best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But they really loved him. And they, you know, were always surrounding him. And he was always making it like, I can have as many women as I want. Which was probably true, because they were all as stupid as I was. And I thought, well, once they would have you, they really wouldn't feel like that. You know, but I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
But there were women who were also just charmed. I mean, I'll never forget when I was at work one time, and when my marriage broke up with my ex-husband because of the fact we were living in different cities, I got him a job where I worked here in Philadelphia. And, you know, I always tell people I'm like the best ex-wife any man could ask for. Men should marry me just to divorce me so I could be their ex-wives. And, you know, here I am setting him up, getting a good job, hoping that he'd be around so he could, you know, do help a little bit with the children. But, you know, one of the women who I worked with and who knew he was gay, she came up to me one day and she said, how could you possibly leave him? How could you possibly let him get away? And I looked at her and I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, you know he's gay. She says, well, everybody has something. It's no big deal. And she meant it. You know, she said, it could be worse. He's not abusing you. He's not this. So he's gay. Everybody has something wrong with them.
Wow.
And she just couldn't get it.
Yeah, they have no idea unless they lived it, been through it.
Mm-hmm. People have no idea of how serious a problem this really is and how much emotion it takes out of you and what it takes from you. You know, Deborah, since, you know, you joined the whole straight wife circuit, you wrote two books.
Yeah.
Your first one was Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors, and then you had your follow-up book, Signs of a Gay Husband, Volume 2, On the Other Side of Fear. And both of these books are really helpful to a lot of our women who are reading them as far as making connection on how you're treated while you're in these marriages. Would you say that's pretty much what it focused on?
On the first one, yes, the hidden behaviors to look out for. And the second one was more about healing and moving forward.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the best methods are for healing?
The best methods for healing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's hard. Well, at first I needed time to myself, and so I needed some real time to myself. So I went and stayed with my brother for a while. And got a lot of rest. I was mentally exhausted. And I needed that time, you know, to adjust. Because basically...
To unclutter the clutter, right?
What?
To unclutter the clutter.
Yes. And so the time alone and to heal and move forward... You know, I think you have to take the focus off of the gay husband or the toxic partner and focus on yourself and your own healing and know that this isn't going, that pain is not going to last forever and ever. I mean, it does form scar tissue and it's easier, you know, living gets easier. But it takes time to get to that point. So be patient.
It takes a lot of time. Yeah, I tell women, don't rush yourself. There's no quick fix to this. Every time you think you're three steps ahead, you're another step back, you know, because all the residual scarring that you have with these marriages. You know, you think you're moving ahead, but then all of a sudden one incident happens and you find yourself back in that, you know, crazy world. Because most of us have crazy lives when you have a gay husband. They're not the run-of-the-mill lives because the husband's living a life that's not even his to live. So he's putting on an act and, you know, he's making you crazy. You're losing your self-confidence. You're losing your ability to think straight because you're caught up in his gay thinking. And, you know, so just to even come back to who you were before you got married takes a long time. You have to unravel all of this stuff. Would you say that's true?
Yes, and I think finding a support group, find people that support you, you know, stay away from people that are unsupportive of you. If you have to get rid of toxic people in your life, it's a good time to do that. And, I mean, it's going to, that'll come to you, too, if you've been in a toxic relationship or lived where your needs were never met and you were constantly put down by someone. Once you get out of it, you won't want to be around people that tear away at you like that anymore and put you down. It'll come natural to you, like, I don't want to be around this anymore.
I think when you come from an abusive situation, you tend to stay in, whether it's your coworkers who are abusive, whether it's your neighbors who are abusive, you know, they look for people like you, people who they can abuse, because these are people who don't want to take responsibility for their own lives, and they'd rather just blame somebody else for it, and you're the great victim. You know, you're used to being beaten on, and they know how to find you. Would you say that's true?
I would say that's true, and, you know, that's been the experience most of my life up until this point, and then I realized that I needed boundaries and that I had choices. But just this experience just woke me up, and I just started doing these things naturally for myself. Like, I'm going to take care of me now. I haven't. My whole life, I haven't. I took care of everybody, you know, other people's needs. But I'm not here anymore to be somebody's, you know, whipping boy or whatever you want to call it.
Whipping person, let's be correct politically. Whipping person, Deb.
Whipping person.
Yeah, but absolutely. Yeah, we know. That's what people will pick on, that we have the wrong, you know, pronouns in there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, absolutely. We don't have to keep taking people's abuse. We have to stand up and say no. You know, and I think that can happen until you learn to love yourself. If you don't love yourself, you're going to continually get abused by other people. That's not to say you have to be selfish about it. I mean, you can love other people, too. But you must put your own needs first. You can't be thinking about what's doing good for everybody else. You have to do good for yourself.
And
I think that is
caring. I always thought that if I did something that I felt selfish if I took care of me. I felt selfish. And I didn't want to say no, and I didn't want to disappoint. But it's not being
the same way.
Yes.
I'm trying to get selfish. I mean, I think you have to learn to set boundaries. Because then you're always doing for other people what you don't want to do to start with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you're never happy because you have no time to yourself. And it kind of reminds me of a girl I knew many years ago. I guess it's going back almost 30 years ago. She was one of my students, one of my early students when I started teaching. And, you know, she was a girl who's maybe 10 years younger than me. She would call me on the phone at home, and she would talk. And an hour would pass by, and she would be talking about nothing and not even having a breath to let me get in anything.
Mm-hmm.
And back in those days, we didn't have caller ID, so you just didn't know who was calling. And then I'd pick up the phone again. It was like almost every other day she'd be talking for an hour and a half. And because I didn't have the strength to just be assertive and say to her, look, I'm really sorry. I don't have all this time to talk. You know, has nothing to do about, you know, liking you. I just don't have time. You know, I'm a single mom. I have to watch my kids, do things with them. I don't have an hour and a half to blow on the phone. But instead, I just became so angry that, you know, I tried not to answer the phone thinking it was her. When I did, I would just yell at her and say, I can't talk anymore. I'm busy, and slam down the phone. Well, she did get the hint, but it didn't make me feel better because I wasn't able to assert myself and just tell her the truth.
Yeah.
But I think that so many of us are afraid of offending people, that they're not going to like us, they're not going to love us because we've been so unloved before by our families, by our husbands, that we're not looking for conflict. You know, that's why we're trying so much harder than other people try. I always say straight wives make the best wives because they try harder than anybody else I know to make something that's impossible to work.
Yeah.
You know, they do everything. They run around in circles like crazy and never getting anywhere, but they do it. So that's one of the things I think we have to work towards, changing your boundaries, learning how
yes,
to say
I never
no.
Want to hurt anybody's feelings or make them feel bad
mm-hmm.
or disappoint them. Yes, I had all
right,
that.
I'm the same way. I want to, you know, we want people to like us. You know, that validates us, who we are, and so we don't look to make enemies. But they sure know how to find us, Deb, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Now, there are some people who just don't care. And they don't care whose enemies they're creating. Yeah, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about your book and that the case, or how is that coming along?
Oh, it's coming along nicely. I know the federal government, I've been working with them this past 7 months. First, it was the local government in California. Now the federal government stepped in and the cyberbullying unit team. They've been really wonderful putting together a case for me of the people who were cyberbullying me and harassing me. And when I go to California in April, I have some paperwork I have to file there in California, which, you know, they're waiting for me to come in. And then we'll see where it takes us. But,
well,
you know, like I say,
I want you to keep me updated on
it. Don't worry, Deb. I'll be announcing it to everybody, you know, promising all kinds of things will come out good from this. But hopefully other people will not be bullied and beaten down like I was, but continue to be beaten down by a bunch of strangers who don't know me, but who just thought they would teach me a lesson about telling people the truth.
Yeah.
That straight women and gay men just don't mix. Nothing's ever going to change my mind on that, for sure. Nobody's ever going to get me to say otherwise, even though they've tried and they've tried to destroy my life. But I always say payback's a bitch, you know, and it really
you've
is.
You've been through a lot, though.
I plan to make it that way.
You've been through a lot over the years. You know?
I certainly have.
And your support, and you haven't wavered in your support of women going
no.
through this and really admire all you've done and how you keep on going.
Yes, and I plan to. And even though I'm not going to be actively involved, I'll always be there for people when they need me. All they have to do, I always say I'm only a click away, and I'll be happy to help or refer them to people who can help them. And Deborah, I want to thank you for all you've done to support me over the last few years and be there as my cheerleader and helper.
You're welcome.
And I know great things are in store for you, too. And we will, regardless of everything, we'll always be connected.
Yes.
And that's because I love you.
And I love you, too.
You're like my sister, Deborah. Yep, you really are. And I thank you so much for everything. And I'm glad you're taking a little break and regrouping your life right now, too, right? Hello?
Thank you, Bon. Hello?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
I'm here.
My phone was, I had to grab a different phone. This one that I was on
not a problem. Well, now's our time to say goodbye. We only have less than 30 seconds left. So, Deborah, thank you so much for joining my show, for being part of my life, and we'll be together forever. And
thank
to all
you,
of our
Bonnie.
Listeners, we'll be back here next week on the Straight Wives Talk Show. Have a great week. Love to all of you, and I love you, Deborah.
I love you, too. Good night.
Good night.